Welcome to the Rap Soul Podcast, where we dive deep into the world of music that moves our hearts and gets our feet tapping. This is the intersection of rap and soul music from the 80s, 90s, and 2000s. We appreciate you for listening. Share this podcast with a friend or family member who loves music as much as you do. The podcast is hosted by 12 Kyle. Next up, the Rap Soul Podcast.
What's up, y'all? It's your boy 12 Kyle from the Rap Soul Podcast. I want to thank each and every one of you for tuning in as you do each and every week. I really do appreciate it. I also wanted to offer a programming note. This particular episode, the Rap Soul Podcast Classic, is an old episode. And for some, it may have been something that they've heard before because it was initially on the flagship station, the 12 Kyle Podcast, back in 2016. But I wanted to give it to you guys here because the thing is that many of you didn't know my podcast existed in 2016. And the great thing about these episodes is that the information has not changed. It's not dated, and it's going to sound and feel as fresh as it did back then. So sit back and relax and check out this new episode from the Rap Soul Podcast Classic. I appreciate it. 5,000. Yo. Thanks again for checking out another edition of the 12 Kyle Podcast. I'm 12 Kyle. Then again, you probably already know that by now. If you haven't done so already, make sure that you subscribe to the podcast. You can find the podcast just about anywhere. We're on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, Overcast FM, Google Play, Pocket Cast. You can follow me on Instagram at 12 Kyle Podcast. You can follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/spellitout, TWELVEKYLE. And of course, you can catch me on the Twitter streets at 12 Kyle, the number 12KYLE, and at 12 Kyle Podcast. So there's no reason not to subscribe. All right, so what I'm going to talk about today, if you've been listening to the podcast, part of what we're doing is we're featuring albums that are turning, some of the best albums that are turning 20 years old, hip hop albums that are turning 20. On July 2nd, 1996, there was an album that dropped. It was called It Was Written, dropped by the rapper Nas. This was Nas's second album following up his debut classic, Illmatic. It Was Written, as I mentioned, turns 20 years old. That's bugged out when you think about it, because you got to think about what was really, really going on 20 years ago. And 20 years ago, as I mentioned, Illmatic dropped in 94. So Nas had a couple of years to ride the wave of success of that album. And here he is coming out with his second album. And of course, the critics and everybody else all had the same question. Can he do it again? I mean, in hip hop, that's big. I mean, you don't want to have the sophomore slump, if you will. A lot of guys fall off from album one to album two. And so Nas was really trying to avoid that. There is a difference between how each album sounded. Illmatic had a certain sound, and It Was Written had a certain sound. But you also have to look at the backdrop of what was going on in 1996. And at that particular time, July 2nd, 1996, the West was winning. And the East was slowly but surely bringing it back. And ironically, the album that dropped the week prior to Nas's album was Reasonable Doubt by Jay-Z. So, you know, you had a lot of momentum kind of coming back toward the East and New York City in particular. So that was the backdrop. And this album, again, with it being Nas's second album, he has to, I mean, just imagine coming up and you knock it out the park, your first plate appearance. I mean, like, Nas really changed the game with Illmatic. So here he is. He has to follow up to a classic album, something that a lot of MCs couldn't do. But Nas clearly delivered with this album. I remember actually purchasing the album. Remember driving to the record store. Shout out to the record stores. Driving to the record store and actually purchasing it. And I remember putting it in my CD player and reading through the liner notes. Shout out to liner notes. Liner notes kept us on top of our game, and it, you know, helped us learn the words to albums and songs and things of that nature. But I remember distinctly going to the store, buying the album, and I specifically actually sat in the parking lot and listened to, I think it was like the first three or four tracks before I moved the car. And the album was incredible. I thought it was, it's hard to follow up to Illmatic, because Illmatic was something, you know, prior to Illmatic, all we had was, the buzz about Nas. We heard him on Live at the Barbecue, and for him to come back with It Was Written, I thought was great. And as I mentioned, and I'll get into it a little bit on the podcast, you know, there's differences between both albums as far as how they sound and everything like that. But the first thing that jumps out at me was the artwork, the album cover artwork. If you remember on Illmatic, it was a picture of young Nas with Queensbridge in the background. This is the album cover for It Was Written was, a much older Nas, still Queensbridge in the background. So that was the first thing. The album starts off before I even get into what the album started off with, let's just talk about the production. I thought this album was very well produced. Gone was the boom bap sound from Illmatic. Now, for me, I didn't necessarily, it didn't necessarily bother me. But, you know, you had some of us in the hip-hop community, some hip-hop heads. They really missed the Primo and Pete Rock boom bap sound from Illmatic, even though Premier does produce an album on this, a song on this album. Primarily, most of the production came from the Trackmasters, who weren't necessarily new to producing at the time, but this was one of their babies, if you will. The Trackmasters did the majority of the tracks. As I mentioned, Premier did a track, I Gave You Power. We'll talk about that in a second. There was the Live Squad. There was actually a track produced by the legend, Dr. Dre. And that was big as well. And I'll talk about that in a second. Also, LES, Havoc from Mobb Deep. So, you know, you had kind of like a mix. You had a good mix, I think, of producers. I actually liked the production of the album. I think, with the exception of maybe one or two songs, the production was solid through and through all the way out. And I think if you follow Nas, then that, you know, that's one thing that obviously became kind of like a sticking point as far as his production or lack thereof on some of his, you know, subsequent albums. But the production was tight. The production was tight, I thought. And it kept me into it. Definitely kept me into it. So the album starts off, there's an intro, you know, it's okay. It's, you know, it's got these guys talking like slaves on the plantation, and they have these horrible Southern accents. I could have done without the intro, but the intro does feature, a Change Gonna Come from Sam Cooke. So it's always good to hear old school songs like that. So after that, the first track on the album, track two, track number two, The Message. what can I say about this song? I mean, like, here's the thing. Like, if you had any doubts as to where Nas was, I mean, he kills it. First bar, Fake Thug, No Love. You get the slug, CB4, Gusto. Your luck low, I didn't know till I was drunk though. You freak niggas played out, get fucking eight out. Prostitute turn bitch, I got the gauge out. 96 ways I made out, Montana way, the good F-E-L-L-A, verbal AK spray, dip detachy, jumped out the range, empty out the ashtray, a glass of Zay, make a man, Cassius Clay, red dot plots, murder schemes, 32 shot guns, regulate with my dun, 17 glops, gleam from one ring, yo, let me let y'all niggas know one thing, there's one life, one love, so there could only be one king. What? When I heard that, I was like, yo, are you serious? That was Nas. But that just, like, it took me back to Live at the Barbecue. It took me back to Halftime. It took me back to New York State of Mind. In the first verse of the album. Dope. Dope. He killed it. He killed it. From there, you go on to Street Dreams. Produced by the Trackmasters, who also produced The Message. He used the sample, Street Dreams. I guess you could call it a sample of Sweet Dreams by the Eurythmics. Street Dreams are made of this. That was back in the early 80s. Shout out to that group. That song was hard. But, you know, great lyrics, great production on that one. Then we get to track number four. Track number four, I Gave You Power. One of my favorite tracks on this album. It may be my second favorite track behind The Message. I Gave You Power, Nas actually flips it. And this shows his lyricism. And trust me when I tell you, nobody was doing things like this. I Gave You Power, he raps from the perspective of a gun. And he is speaking, I guess, in third person, if you will, as if he were a gun. And he talks about how, you know, how he felt being a gun and how he was being used in the community, so forth and so on. And he was going to jam the next time that his owner picked him up. And he goes through a story, and I won't spoil the story. Of course, I'm pretty sure all of you listening to it know the story, but nonetheless, I'm not going to spoil it for you. Go back and listen to it. Dope lyricism right there. And I think one of that was very critical, I think, because Nas showed you right then and there, when you're a product of Slick Rick, when you're a product of Rakim, you know, one of the things that you have to do, you have to be able to tell stories. And I mean, this was a great storytelling rhyme right here. And I think that was it gave us a glimpse of how deep Nas could be, because I mean, most people wouldn't use that type of format to feature on their particular album, particularly a sophomore album at that, following up a classic. But yeah, dope song, man. Dope. Probably, like I said, probably my second favorite song on the album. The next track five, was Watch Them Niggas with Foxy Brown on the hook. Dope, you know, again, great lyrics, tight production. Track six, Take It in Blood, that was produced by the Live Squad. I thought that was okay. It wasn't, you know, it didn't blow me away, but the beat was tight, and you know, Nas did his thing. I mean, like, I literally could recite lyric for lyric on this particular song, but for the sake of time, I'm not. But you know exactly what I mean. Track seven featured, and I always laugh when I hear, like, there's a little interlude at the beginning of the song, features Dr. Dre. Beat, very sinister type beat from Dr. Dre. But I always laugh when I hear the beginning of the track, because it's Nas and Dre, and they're allegedly smoking weed, and they're, hit this weed, man, hit this. I'm like, really? They sound so damn lame. Nonetheless, man, I love that track, man. It sounded really, really dope. Like I said, it just had this really, really creepy, sinister sound. Then the next track was track eight, Affirmative Action. Man, Affirmative Action sets off a subsequent album of a group that is birthed from this, and that is The Firm, with AZ, Foxy Brown, and Cormega. Love this track, man. Love this track. It's funny, for years, like, I thought that Dr. Dre had produced it, but it was actually produced by the Trackmasters. I don't know why I thought that, but man, that song probably is one of the highlights of the album, because, you know, it's the crew, and I mean, like, what they're rhyming about is, and a lot of critics called this and said that this was like the mafioso rap, because it introduced us to Nas Escobar, or Escobar, when we say Escobar season began on this album. It truly did. I mean, this was the birth of Nas Escobar, you know. And now, to be honest, some of Nas's critics, the Escobar talk and the talk of drugs and, you know, guns and all this stuff like that, because you really didn't get a lot of that on Illmatic, turned some people off, some of his critics off. I mean, but I personally like the way that, you know, it showed a different side of Nas, and I like Nas Escobar, you know. The next track was The Setup featuring Havoc, another banger. Two Queens MCs going at it. The next song I thought was very, very clever. Black Girl Lost, featuring JoJo from Casey and JoJo from Jodeci, singing on the hook. If you want a podcast where culture, conversation, and life collide, where you get insightful commentary, engaging discussions, and a fresh perspective on everything, then you need to listen to the 12 Kyle podcast. Hosted by the one and only, yours truly, 12 Kyle, a voice that you know and trust. This podcast will bring you thought-provoking moments, compelling stories, and a whole lot of fun. Whether you're a first-time listener or just tuning in, each episode promises to be something new and exciting. So sit back, relax, join 12 Kyle, myself, and my guests as we break down the world around us and give you stories that you've never heard before. From nostalgic throwbacks to everything in between, the 12 Kyle podcast is a front row seat to this conversation. Subscribe now and never miss an episode of the 12 Kyle podcast, where the vibe is always real and the discussion is always worth your time. Are you feeling nostalgic for the golden eras of rap and soul music? If so, tune in to the Rap Soul podcast. We are your weekly journey through the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, spotlighting the music and the hidden gems that shaped the soundtrack of our lives. From the powerful beats to the soulful melodies, we bring you the best of the past with fresh insights and stories. Rediscover the music that defined a generation. Subscribe to the Rap Soul podcast and enjoy the vibes.
Tale of Nas's ode to, you know, black girls and black women in general, and, you know, seeing their struggle. But he also puts a twist on it, saying, like, you can do better. You shouldn't settle for less, that type of thing. The one thing I didn't like about this song was the hook. I think if they could just change the hook a little bit. I don't know. The hook just sounded corny. I don't know why. It just sounded a little corny, but still a dope track. The next track, Suspect, produced by LES, another banger, man. I mean, Nas, his Streets Tales are just, you know, they, at this point, that the album is at a fever pitch, I think. And I think, you know, this is Nas is just, you know, Escobar really just bringing it home lyrically. Shootouts was the next track, a good track. It was okay. I listened to it, but I'm not like, yo, you gotta hear that. You know, that was one that I could have done without. Next track was track 13, Live Nigga Rap, with Mobb Deep, produced by Havoc, another banger. And really, I think for me, this was very key because it gave us a chance to hear Nas with Mobb Deep.
And, you know, of course, over the years past, they kind of fell out and they weren't as close as they once were. But early in Nas's career and early in Mobb Deep's career, these guys would appear on each other's albums. And I thought this was good, and it was good for Queens, and it was definitely good for New York, and the sound that they had, man. I mean, those guys were, they sounded really, really good together. And then the last track on the album was the, I guess you could say the biggest one. Can't really say you guess. It's got to be a fact. The biggest track of the album, If I Rule the World, Imagine That, with Lauryn Hill. That song obviously propelled Nas, and this, and also propelled this album commercially. Obviously, it featured the sample from Houdini. The track was, I mean, the title was from Curtis Blow's If I Rule the World. Shout out to Curtis Blow. So, you know, it was, and then you had Lauryn Hill, L Boogie on the hook. I mean, man, you couldn't go wrong. And I remember the video. It was, you know, really, really nice video, and directed by Hype Williams. So, you know, it had all the colors and everything. And this one got major airplay on MTV. And again, the song got major airplay on radio, black radio, and this really, really propelled the album. The album went, you know, I think at the time, the album went double platinum. I think over a period of time, it's 4 million. So he's had 4 million sales on this album. This is by far his most commercially successful album. Now I will say this much. There's a segment of people who, you know, didn't like the fact that this song was on here, and they didn't like the fact that they felt like Nas was swinging for the commercial fences, if you will. I didn't look at it like that. I just saw it as a dope collaboration between Nas and L Boogie, and just, you know, a hype song. But, you know, when you couple that with the video, I could kind of see how people would say, well, oh, he's being too commercial. I mean, this is a guy that did, you know, Halftime and, you know, The World Is Yours. And then it goes to, you know, If I Rule the World. So it's different styles, different sounds. And obviously, once you saw the video, it looked totally different as well. So I can kind of understand that. I just don't agree. I mean, it was some haters. I think it was just some haters, and it's okay. You know, some people, hey, I mean, it is what it is. But I don't think that Nas set out to make a commercial album. I think this was a street album, had some commercial appeal, but I don't think that, you know, because you can't listen to Suspect and say, hey, this is a commercial album, because it's not. But dope nonetheless. So yeah, man, I think it's I don't knock Nas for the commercialism of this album. I thought he did what he needed to do, and I think he had a very, very good, you know, very good response, or sophomore album, if you will, a follow up to Illmatic. I tell you what. What we're going to do is take a quick commercial break. We actually have an interview with Nas where he talks about a little beef he had with Tupac. So on the other side of the break, we'll talk about Nas's beef with Tupac, subsequent beef with Jay-Z, and you know, what Nas did after this album and the significance of the album. Hang on for a second. We'll be right back after this commercial break. Be right back.
Let me ask you about Tupac. Is it true that you seen Tupac at the MTV Awards the couple days before he died? Did you guys run into each other there, actually?
Yeah, we ran into each other.
What was that conversation about, and what was going on with, you know, the whole thing, man? We can take you back to it.
Yo, you know what, man? I was thinking, like, thinking about it the other day, like, he must have been going through a whole lot, dog. You know what I'm saying? Because he saw me. And I saw him, and he had a bunch of people with him. I had a bunch of people with me, and it could have went either way, because at the time, the tension was so high.
Yeah.
And I kind of felt like I was the New York dude at the time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it was my duty to see what was going on. So I went to see what was going on, and he basically had, you know, there was some issues with Mob, and at the time, me and Mob were a lot tighter.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he had heard that I said things about him, and I heard he had this Machiavelli album coming up, and, you know, that he told me he was what he was saying. And he basically was like, you know, we wasn't, me and you never supposed to go at it. Not us, it wasn't supposed to happen. It's just that things got misconstrued. So he's actually like, he was going to change all of that and come meet him in Vegas.
Mm.
And we were just in Vegas, and Jungle bumped into one of the Outlaws. And he was telling Jungle about, you know, how the last thing Pac did wasn't his last message.
Mm.
Pac had more to do. He didn't want his last message to be what we hear.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and he remembers the time and remembers talking about the meeting and everything. So, yeah, man, I'm going to put that in the book one day, children.
Yeah, that's
children
right.
Children out there listening.
We're
going to put that in
bills.
The book, man.
We're going to pay some bills. Come back.
And just like that, I'm back. This is the 12 Kyle podcast, and I am talking about Nas's It Was Written 20 years later. As Nas mentioned in the interview, he had a brief beef, if you will, with Tupac Shakur. And I thought, to be honest, I thought the beef was silly at the time, because Nas did mention Tupac in the song The Message. He was telling a story, and he talked about how he got shot and returned shots, and, you know, how he got away. I mean, like, it was nothing. And Tupac decided to diss Nas on a song called Against All Odds on the Don Caluminati 7-Day Theory, which was Tupac's last album. The album was released shortly, I want to say, like, maybe a week after he died. Nonetheless, as Nas mentioned, he and Tupac ran into each other, and they kind of got away from their crews and got a chance to kind of squash whatever it was. And, you know, Tupac had vowed that he was going to go back and change the lyrics on, you know, on the song. And he had confirmed this with Eric B, and who was with him at the time. And Eric B said later, in a later interview a couple of months later, was that Tupac never got back to the studio, basically, to change those lyrics. He was, you know, he went to Vegas and subsequently was murdered in Vegas. Nonetheless, I think that was, you know, that was kind of, it was sad, you know, and I think Nas probably, you know, felt, I'm pretty sure Nas felt good about the fact that they were able to squash it, but, you know, sad at the same time that Tupac lost his life. But it was not just the quote unquote beef with Nas that would transpire after It Was Written dropped. Subsequently, years later, it would be the beef with Jay-Z. Some would say that this beef kind of resurrected Nas's career. Nas, post It Was Written, he dropped 8 more albums. He's dropped 8 more albums since then. And Nas has been largely successful. You know, he got married, had a child, another child, I should say. He has a daughter and a son. And, you know, Nas is a guy who, he wasn't, lyrically, he was always going to bring it, but he wasn't necessarily going to be a guy who blows you away on the charts. And as I mentioned at the top, It Was Written was his most successful commercial album. I mean, it sold the most albums. I can't say that it's his best album. Where do I rank this, and why is this album significant? I think this is one of Nas's best albums. I think it's not, and I think most people will say that. I don't think it's Illmatic. Now, I've heard some people, albeit a few, I've heard some people say that this is Nas's best album. I could not put It Was Written over Illmatic on any day. Nonetheless, this is a great album. The Source gave it 4 mics. Personally, I would give it 4.5 mics. It's not a 5 mic album. It's not a classic, but it's a supremely dope album. So if I was handing out mics, it doesn't get 4, but it gets 4.5.
a great album, man. Top to bottom, man. I think this solidifies Nas's his ability to just be a great storyteller. It brought out the Nas Escobar that we all know and love, who subsequently went away some years later. But nonetheless, Esco was here, you know, and he was here to stay. And he had a different style, and it showed his lyrical dexterity, if you will. Nas is dope, man. I mean, I've said this before on this podcast and other podcasts that I think lyrically, I think Nas is the number two lyricist of all time behind Rakim. Doesn't mean that he sold the most records. Doesn't mean that he's the best of the best. I think lyrically, he is the second best lyricist that you will find to pick up a mic. If you disagree, let me know. But I think if Nas is not in your top five lyricists, you probably don't have a real top five. And that's being honest. Now, as I mentioned, Nas did get into a quote-unquote beef, if you will, with Jay-Z. And, you know, I'm not going to get into the particulars because you know what happened. But when Nas dropped Ether, man. I actually have to take it back. I'll be honest. The first time that I heard Takeover, I thought it was over for Nas. I mean, like, I literally thought that his career was done. I didn't think that anybody could survive those blows, those haymakers that Jay-Z was throwing on that song. But, you know, Nas got knocked down. He picked himself up, dusted himself off, and he went into the booth and dropped Ether. The Ether to make... Oh my gosh. I mean, I don't even want to get into the lyrics. I mean, it was just an incredible and arguably one of the, if not the best, probably the top three best diss songs ever in hip hop history. Yeah. So that's Nas, man. That's Nas in a nutshell. I think, like I said, I think his post work from It Was Written, some albums left something to be desired. I'll be honest with that. He had some albums that, you know, was loved by the masses. He had some albums that were hated by the masses. I'll give you an example. Nostradamus. As big of a fan as I am of Nas, didn't like that album at all. Didn't like it at all. There was a couple of tracks on there. Other than that, I'm good. I don't need to listen to it. But I think the thing about Nas is that this album helped solidify his place on whatever list that you have him listed at. As I mentioned, there were eight solo albums post It Was Written. He had two collaborative albums, the aforementioned Firm, which dropped the following year in 1997. And then he did Distant Relatives with Damian Marley. So, you know, I think the thing that really stands out about this album, obviously, is Nas's lyricism, but also the production. And I think this is an album that stands the test of time. I think when you put this album on, it'll take you back to 96. It'll take you back to the first time you heard Esco come out and just really just rip it. I mean, it'll take you back to the message. It'll take you back to how you felt when you heard that Nas and L Boogie were going to be on a song together. And I think that's one of the things that makes this album dope. It's just as dope as it was in 1996. And when you look at all of the music that dropped in 1996, that's saying a lot. 20 years doesn't seem like a long time, but it has been. And to be honest, if you're honest with yourself, this album was one of the best albums of 1996. No doubt. Thanks again for checking out another edition of the 12 Kyle Podcast. I'm your boy, 12 Kyle. And I'll holler at you guys next time. 5,000.
PartnerMD is redefining primary care, so you finally have the doctor-patient relationship you've envisioned. Our physicians only see 6 to 10 patients per day, compared to 20 plus with traditional practices. So you always get the dedicated one-on-one time you need from your doctor.
Thank you for listening. This concludes the episode. Be sure to subscribe to the Rap Soul podcast. You can find the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Follow the podcast on social media. And feel free to continue this discussion on our Reddit page. More importantly, share this podcast with a friend or family member who loves music as much as you do. Until next time, 5000.